From the backstretch at Saratoga, this is Loose on the Lead with Steve Bick and Seth Merrill. Loose on the Lead is sponsored by...
Good morning. Welcome to Loose on the Lead. Seth Merrill and Steve Bick. And right at the top of the show, happy to have Lee Einsiedler join us as well after the big victory yesterday in the Saratoga Special. And I said as you sat down, thank you for running into me before the race because I tossed High Oak in and ran away with a nice little triple.
Oh,
so it was a good result after Saratoga Special, but had to be a great result for you as well. Talk a little bit about the excitement. You were talking to me before the race. You said, farther he goes, the better he's going to like it. But you were confident yesterday as well.
We were very confident. And when he won at Belmont going 5.5, the race wasn't much of a race, I guess. And maybe it was a little slow. But when a horse wins doing something that he doesn't want to do first out, that should be a sign that you got something pretty good.
Yeah.
And then since he got up here, he's been training amazing. And We were very confident he was going to run a big race. You can't say he's going to win. You can never do that. Lots happens. But, yeah, we really believe he's a very, very special horse.
Yeah, let's take a look at the stretch run here. And High Oak's going to be the number 11 horse. I like Gunite. I thought Gunite ran a good second. And, you know, you had a clear margin on him. The chart margin at the end of the race, over four lengths. 10-1 High Oak escaped at a little bit of a price in your distinctive pink silks there. What were your feelings going down the stretch there as he pulls away?
Yeah, right about now, Steve was sitting next to me. My son Jeffrey was on the other side. And if you watch Junior here, he starts celebrating about 50 yards to the wire. And it's one of those great days. Really special, really special.
Lee, there's a bunch of things about this that are fascinating, and we'll talk about Casa Creed as well, because the decision to bypass the Troy and end up in the four-star Dave meant that you were going to have this potentially insane Saturday.
Yep.
And of course, you can't win both if you don't win the first one.
Yep.
But talk a little bit as well about the two-year-old aspect of this, because you've had your share of nice horses, but generally... Timber Reserve and Mr. Sydney and those types, but they sort of grew into themselves, as did Casa.
Yes, yes. Well, Mike Salito told me 3 or 4 months ago, he said, you've never had a two-year-old like this. He's been watching him train up here. He said, Lee, this one's really, really special. So to have a two-year-old win at Saratoga in a Saratoga Special is, for a horse owner and everybody involved with the horse, it's a dream come true. And for my partner, Mike Francesa, he's been in the game for a long, long time. I'm really, really happy for him. You know, we own the horse together. And, to have a two-year-old to run like this, he run a 90 buyer. And when he gets to stretch it out even longer, he'll even be better. He was just starting to get going at the 16th pole. And Junior told us that he just dragged him around the track and a lot of gas in the tank. And yeah, this was a special win.
And really, the video doesn't really show the key element of his performance, which was essentially off the break to sit comfortably. And that's the beauty of, you know, particularly, you know, the one turn like this, the elongated sprints. Once you get past even at six or even, frankly, at 5.5, when you've got that kind of a gear, that stalking gear, stalk and go, as Marty McGee always says, the open air outside box. And he can just sit, and you could see into the turn. There we go. And we'll watch the whole race. And you can kind of talk, Lee, earlier in the day, you kind of laid out the whole game plan. So take us around when we get a chance to watch this from start to finish.
Yeah. Well,
and again, he's in the 11. And actually, with a couple of scratches, he was leaving from the 9, but he's going to be the number 11 here as they come out of the gate. And as I say, easy to pick up in your pink silks.
Yep. Well, we love the draw. We loved when I saw he drew 11, I was ecstatic. And he was actually closer to the pace than I thought he'd be.
He broke like a shot. He broke right on top. And Junior just basically just kind of takes an easy hold.
Junior just sat there, took a little hold of him.
Right here.
And right about here, I was thinking... this can't be happening because this is exactly what we envisioned, that we would be maybe three or four lengths off the pace, sitting on the outside, just cruising up. And he's just doing it so easy. And then he moves a little here, and I thought, wow, this can't work out any better.
When the camera pans over to the top, you're going to see, you'll see the jacket squared up, and it just became, look at this, he's really not even asking him, he's dragging him to the lead, right. And you're going to see the camera come around here, and this is right there, and just giving him a little oots, and here he goes.
Right about now, I thought, just the way you dream about. Just when I woke up yesterday morning, he ran the way we were thinking he could run and the way we were dreaming he could run. And right about now, between having you on my left and Jeffrey on my right and the whole team right there, and Junior celebrating 50 yards to the wire, which is uncharacteristic for Junior, and Billy Mott doesn't like when he does that. But it was great. I'm thrilled he did it.
You know, there's a couple of things here. And Seth, you mentioned Gunite, who ran very well and basically was involved from the bell. But one difference that, talk about the post, especially with young horses.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nakatomi drawing down inside,
yep,
and never getting basically, you know, open space,
right,
until it's too late, eating dirt. And you're out there, you know, fresh
just
and
out
clear.
There, cruising around.
That's an element of this, and he's getting the kind of education you'd want. I know that immediately after the race, Billy had said, don't be surprised if we think about the hopeful, but now another 12 hours later, cooler heads are prevailing.
Yeah, discretion is the better part of valor, for sure.
Champagne.
Yeah, we'll go into Champagne, assuming everything is in order. I can tell you this morning, he's fabulous. Came out of the race perfect. You couldn't even hold him down this morning. That's the constitution of this horse. When he comes out of his stall, he's got to have a man with a shank. He's up on his hind legs. He's all over the place. He loves being a racehorse. And yeah, we'll get him a little fresh, and we'll look to run him a mile at Belmont, which after what we saw yesterday is going to be fabulous for him.
Talk a little bit about buying the horse, because you
it's a great
second career start. It's a grade two at Saratoga. Keeneland, last year, you picked him up for $70,000.
Yeah, how about that? Yeah, the pinhookers hate me. I picked him out myself, and I'm a bootlegger. Yeah, so there's a good story behind how we got this horse. A close friend of mine, you know who he is, said to me, there's a horse running in Del Mar tonight. You got to bet him. And that was when Gormley was a two-year-old. So I'm handicapping the races, and I see the race before Gormley's running. I figure out that Kent DeSormo is going to win for Peter Miller at 40-1. True story. So I bet a double with that horse and Gormley in his first start at Del Mar. I guess that's what, 5 years ago? And I win $80,000 on the double. Both of them win. So then Gormley wins his next race, I think the front runner, at a bigger mutual, and I cash another big ticket. So in September of last year,
you're a Gormley fan.
So I'm a Gormley fan.
From the back.
So I'm a Gormley fan. So last September, I'm home. I'm not going to Keeneland because of the pandemic, sure, but I'm looking in the book and I think I have to buy a Gormley. I'm going to take the money that I want on the window and buy a Gormley. So I looked at all the Gormleys and I loved his page. So I called my friend Pat Hopple, who breaks yearlings for us, and he was at the sale, and he said he's not on my list. I said, well, just go look at him. He came back to me about 2 hours later. He said, he's not on my list, but he could have been. He's a beautiful colt. So he sent me a video, and I sent that video to my partner, Mike Francesa. He said, he's a nice-looking colt. Let's try and buy him. So we thought we'd probably spend $150,000, $175,000, and the hammer fell at $70,000. So we picked him out, and Pat had no knocks on him. He vetted perfect. And when Pat broke him all winter long down in Ocala, he was perfect, never missed a day. And when we got him up to New York, he's everything you want in a two-year-old and more. A great story. And amazing story, I hadn't known it. John Sheriffs is from Port Washington, Long Island.
Sure.
I'm from the town Great Neck next door. John used to work at a stable in Great Neck where I had a horse and we used to ride. And they named Gormley after the guy who ran that stable in Great Neck.
Lakeville Road.
Lakeville Stables. So if it wasn't for my good friend telling me to bet on Gormley, right, and John Sheriff's working at the stable where they named it, none of this would have ever happened. So it's a great story.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, really cool.
Well, and you know, part of it that has got to be inspiring, I'd imagine, for anybody. You know, there's plenty of people listening and watching that are involved in the game, and in fact, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about it. Joe Bianca is going to be with us from TDN later, but you got this thing's not going to stand up. The horses will, but the book won't. The New York bred sale tomorrow and Tuesday across the street after a very solid. I mean, it didn't break records Monday, Tuesday, but it was very, very good.
Yeah.
We
bought two.
I was going to say,
bought an Arrogate.
First night, you spent $200 and
$300. Three on an Arrogate, yeah. Pennsylvania bred, big, gorgeous colt, and $200 on a Ghost Zapper from Frank Taylor over at TaylorMade.
Nice.
Really, two beautiful horses.
Well, the nice part of this is you spend $70,000 on a yearling, and, you know, then another $25,000 getting it ready.
Yep.
So you call it $100,000. By the time you're done, $120,000 invested it to get this kind of return. And you've spent real money on plenty. You spent real money on Monday.
Yes.
You know, to spend this and to come away with a stake winner, and with exciting prospects going
as
forward.
As a 2-year-old at Saratoga,
you can't beat it.
You cannot beat it.
No.
You cannot beat it.
Talk a little bit about how you got into the game. I'm always fascinated. You're now a very prominent owner, obviously.
Right.
What pulled you into the horse racing
game? Well, like a lot of the guys involved from New York, like Mike Rapoli and guys, you know, we grew up in New York and the family goes to the races. And my dad loved the track and we used to go to the races all the time. Go to Aqueduct, go to Belmont. And then the first time I went, I was a little kid and I was just mesmerized by it. And I fell in love with racing early on. And then as I got older in high school, we used to drive up to Saratoga, right? And then on the way home, we would stop at Yonkers to bet to bet the
Let's go to the hill. Go to the hill.
So like a lot of us guys growing up in New York with not a lot going for us, we just love to go to the races.
Well, living here, we had the double header, but it was across the street.
Yeah, exactly.
You had the double header. You had to drive down to Yonkers.
Yeah. And I've been fortunate enough in my day job and business to be able to get involved and play at a pretty high level. But we keep it pretty streamlined, one or two horses a year.
Yeah.
And my partner, Mike Francesa, and we've had a couple with Rick Pitino.
Yep.
And it's enough. It's enough, and it's been great. It's been great.
I guess so.
Let's also get into the four-star day, because you have a situation now where the trip to Del Mar, you already knew that Casa Creed off the Jiper win was a win and you're in for the sprint, but the idea of and it's funny, you drew the 11 for the Troy
exactly
as well, but that 11 wasn't as preferable as the 11 for yesterday.
Yeah,
so the opportunity to try for another win in your in the four-star Dave
made a lot of sense.
And you know, here's Casa again and with the four, and you see him kind of rallying and kind of leveling out right a little bit here. In the meantime, what a ride by, my God, what a ride and performance by Got Stormy, who just clearly loves it up here.
She is amazing. She won it two years ago, last year.
Unbelievable.
She was second last year. Casa Creed was third.
Right.
I think the decision to run yesterday with Casa Creed was a great decision. We had everything to gain and zero to lose. He ran great. He ran third in a grade one yesterday here in the four-star Dave. His future races will all be shorter races now. And there's a race for him at Kentucky Downs on September 11th, going six. It plays more like 6.5 because it's a little bit uphill. So we'll get him down to Kentucky Downs, and then we'll get him ready to go to the Breeders' Cup. And it looks like High Oak punched his ticket to the Breeders' Cup yesterday. So we'll get them on the plane together, and we'll all go out there, and it'll be an amazing weekend at the Breeders' Cup.
You've liked Casa Creed. Talking to you in the past, you liked Casa Creed all along, as have I. I think this horse has been very talented. But talk about getting a grade one just prior in the Jiper down at Belmont, putting the grade. That was a big performance. I texted you right after because I was playing a bankroll down at our studio in Albany for some of our patrons, and I jumped on that one at 10-1. So that made me look good that day as well.
Yeah, you know, that was a breathtaking performance.
Yeah, it really
was. That was special. He won the elusive quality going 7 and closed like crazy in a paceless race. So when we ran in the Jiper, I thought if we can get something to run at, he would be a handful. And I was standing there with Bill Mott, my son Jeff, and I think Casa Creed at the time was like 12-1. And I turned to Billy as they're going to the gate. I said, he's 12-1. Don't they know you're in the Hall of Fame? He said, apparently not. And then we made a really big bet last minute. And yeah, when Junior got him out in the clear, boy, he was special with 105 buyer that day. So, but I'm glad what we did yesterday. And he certainly run a great race to be third and a fourth.
Yeah, absolutely.
Dave, you got to give tremendous credit to God Stormy. Boy, she's great. So I guess Spendthrift had a pretty good day. Stormy.
Not a bad half hour.
High Oak because of Gormley. Casa Creed, they have Jimmy Creed. He ran third and a four-star Dave. So yep. it was a great day for all the connections.
Yeah, no question about it.
Yep, we're excited.
Well, yeah, and the Jiper, the grade one win going 6, and now the multiple grade one placements going 2 turns, plus the Hall of Fame win, right?
Yep. He cost... Casa Creed, I think we paid $105,000. He's now won over $800,000.
Yeah.
Kenny McPeak picked him out, loved him. And I don't have to tell you, you know, when Billy Mott brings him over, you have this level of comfort that everything is in order. You can't win them all, but you go over there really confident about the preparation and about how the horse is doing. And he's become such an important part of my life personally. And then professionally with the racing, and he's just amazing person to be welcome in his barn. It's really, really great.
How'd you go up with the Silks? Because we watched 2 races now, and as I said, when we looked at High Oak, easy to pick out the hot pink.
Yeah, just because they're easy to see, you know? Yeah.
You got that European style. You got that international or Australian style.
Yeah,
cap.
A little Australian cap with the stripes
with the
on
circles.
It. Yeah,
that's not a North American.
No.
The cap.
I actually had a graphic designer at my company, a very talented guy, and I gave him a vision of what I wanted my silks to look like, and he designed them. I said hot pink and fancy them up a little, and my friend Bill Henderson did a great job putting those together. And I loved them because when you're so far away,
I just see
those silks, you know.
Yeah. That I can tell you that for those that are going to have their own, you know, their own stable or going to put a partnership together, the late Stanley Ettinger from Pond Street, when we started DT, and I said to Stanley, Stanley, any advice? And he said, use a neon color.
It's a good idea.
He said, it makes it easy for the partners to follow the horse. And my website colors were green and blue, so I went with that neon lime
right.
green
yeah.
because it's easily spottable.
Exactly.
Same exact philosophy.
Well, we were sitting there yesterday, and we were together, and they break all the way up back there. Yeah. You just see those silks.
So
you don't need binoculars. You don't need the TV. You see those silks out there. It's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's really terrific.
Yeah.
Lee, talk a little bit, because, and obviously it's way early. However, you know, depending on what happens downstate with the Champagne.
Right.
But certainly Casa has had some inquiries already, and if not, they're coming as he gets closer to a career decision
right.
and based on the outcome of what lies ahead.
Right.
But you had the opportunities, and you sent Mr. Sidney
overseas. Yeah.
But talk about how that portion, a portion of it, because you know there's so many new experiences when you're involved in the game right from the origin, but then, you know, until you go through it, you really, you know, you feel your way. Do you bring somebody in to negotiate for you? How do you play that?
You know, that's a great question. I had some people advising me when we had Mr. Sidney. Right now, we've had some feelers about Casa Creed, but I'm not focused on it right now.
Sure.
You know, we want to focus on the rest of this year and running. And then we'll go from there. We know he'll have opportunities to do something somewhere, but you know, if he's going to sprint on the grass, there's no reason he can't come back next year and run. I mean, Get Stormy's a 6-year-old, and we saw what she did yesterday, and the way we take care of him, So
well, but she. It's funny because I'm going to certainly discuss that this week. And Mark Cassie even alluded yesterday to the concept of maybe bringing her back for a it's a selfish concept about bringing her back for a six-year-old season. But a mare has one baby a year.
Yeah.
The stallion is going to cover 140 mares and potentially, you know, 250 if they shuttle. Well, so it's a and the whole concept of taking money off the table is tough because, you know, you spend money in this game. Whether you're a home breeder or whether you're buying at auction, if you're breeding to sell or race, there's losses that accrue. And the best advice is, you know, from everybody I ever hear saying when you have a chance to offset those losses, you have to do it. It's frustrating when people say, oh, they're rushing the horse to stud. Yes, but they might be rushing that three-year-old to stud. But the person who sold the horse is going to then take that money and you know, stay involved and reinvest.
I understand all that. I'm very fortunate that I have a very good day job.
Yeah.
My Casamigos tequila business is amazing. And for me, the best part of racing is racing. So I'm not in a rush to do any deals. I don't need to. Knock wood, we're very lucky in that regard. So if he tells us he wants to run next year, Casa Creed will run him. And a deal will come or a deal won't come. We'll figure that out when
there
out.
There you go.
But I like leading him over to the paddock up here.
Exactly. And enjoy the racing part of it. Way much or more. No doubt. So. No doubt.
But he'll have an opportunity somewhere.
Well, a special... As I tweeted late last night, I put up some pictures of you and Jeffrey, and
Mike was in town too. He was in the winner's circle.
Oh yeah,
His kids.
Yep, they're a great family. His kids are fabulous. They love the game, and it was great having all of them. And having Jeffrey with me is amazing. And and I know my son Aaron was smiling down on us yesterday, it was really really special.
Exactly.
Really great.
Uniform outpouring of appreciation. Louis Lazzanero came over and the way in which you're congratulated in this, scenario for all kinds of reasons, for personal reasons as well as for what you've done for the game. You answer every call for the needs of the charitable side of the game and, when people say, you know, you deserve it, that's an accurate assessment.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate that. But I'm happy to help wherever we can.
You guys had a great event over at the Adelphi about a week ago.
We donated 150 bottles of Casamigos.
Signed bottles. I saw one of those. Were great.
Raised money for PDF was terrific. And they're very thankful. And, we always want to help. Yeah. Wherever we can help, we want to help.
Yeah.
We'll do whatever we can. Sure, anytime.
All right, Lee, we appreciate your stopping by
me.
And congratulations.
Thank you.
A really great Saturday.
Thanks, Dave.
A Saturday in Saratoga Stakes winner, and it was a great performance.
Sure
we'll be
was.
Looking for High Oak and certainly Casa Creed down the road as well.
Where'd the name come from?
For High Oak? Yeah, Mike Francesa named him. His home in Long Island is named High Oak. So we bought two. Okay. We bought the Gormley, and we have a Dialed In that's going to be ready by the fall.
I like Dialed In.
So of the two of them, I named the Dialed In.
What's the name?
You'll like this, Gribbenis.
Oh, he's not the first.
Most people don't know
he's not the first Gribbenis.
You know what Gribbenis
is? He doesn't.
Know.
He wouldn't know from Gribbenis if
your Jewish grandmother would know.
Oh, okay.
His
right.
Jewish grandmother, like three grandmothers ago.
Fried chicken fat with onions, and it's delicious.
They turn into little potato chips.
Yeah. So I named him Gribbenis, and Mike's home is High Oak. He named High Oak High Oak. So that's where the name came from.
Excellent.
We'll see Gribbenis around Thanksgiving.
Information you don't get anywhere else.
Exactly.
All right, Lee, appreciate the visit.
Thanks for having me, guys. Thank you.
All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, more from a Sunday edition of Loose on the Lead. Stay tuned.
Welcome to Albany County, an incredible destination to live, work, and play, with easy connections to more than a dozen cities from our vibrant modern airport. It's a short trip downtown to a hive of culture and amusement, from world-class shows at the newly renovated Times Union Center to reliving the past at the New York State Museum. From outdoor recreation to shopping to nightlife, Albany County has something for everyone. We'll see you soon.
Capital OTV is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTV TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTV live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTV TV. OTV TV on Roku. Try it now.
Stone is an outside front. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Birdstone. Birdstone surges past. Birdstone wins the Belmont Stakes.
In front, but here comes High Chaparral. High Chaparral, the defending champ, to take it to Papa. These two are travels head to head with Joe Hart bearing down on them. It's going to be a three horse photo finish in the turn. Here's the wire. Photo finish.
We're back on Loose on the Lead on this Sunday morning out of the Four Star Dave and Saratoga Special. It was special to have had Lee Einsiedler kick off the show, and Joe Bianca's back here in the middle seat.
Good to see you.
Look at you.
Good to be with you guys.
The beard is
thank
the
you.
Beard is
I was,
filled
I was,
out
I was looking at it. I was looking at it in the
on
screen
TV,
right there. I think it's a little. I think it's about peak right now.
There's no doubt. So, I personally find this proliferation of the you know the beards the soul sea shanty thing I got some issues with it, but on you it looks good.
Well, I moved back to Brooklyn, so it was required.
Exactly, all the
hipsters. When I came over the bridge, they were like, "Where's your beard?" So it's going okay, I think.
Where did you guys end up?
We're in Bed-Stuy.
Okay, nice.
Yeah, so it's like pretty hip. It's one of the last authentic Brooklyn neighborhoods, I think. So yeah, we love it, actually. We've got a backyard, which is a rare thing in Brooklyn. So, it's too humid to do anything out there now, but the idea of it is nice.
It's the concept.
Yeah.
Joe, of course, at TDN, Thoroughbred Daily News, and it's now, like, what? How long?
Over 5 years.
I was going to say five and a half years.
Yeah. Yeah. Time flies, for sure.
Well, and Joe, you know, literally, I mean, you know, for everybody that aspires in some capacity to be involved in the game, and whatever side it is, whether it's with the animals, whether it's on the training side, whether it's in the media, photography, Joe is a terrific example of somebody that, you know, took an interest, was hoping, went to school, and, you know, had you know, toes in the water. And the next thing you know, you're 30 years old and it's a career.
A little older than that now. You're going to make me blush and be the same color as your jacket if you keep this up. But no, I mean, I'll give a lot of credit to you as well. You opened some doors for me. But yeah, it's great to work in a field that you're passionate about and to keep growing, you know, and learning more. Because you always say this is always more to learn in racing.
That's for sure.
And that's the truth for me every day, for sure.
Talk a little bit. I want to talk racing because your first interest is, you know, the racing, the wagering. That's what you love, and mm-hmm. that's what the way you and Joe's got a great opinion. However, the work that you've had to do with TDN, and because of the nature of the TDN, which really is a bloodstock journal first before anything, mm-hmm. has, I think, and I'm speculating, just because of how much writing you do on the bloodstock side and the editing that you've had to do, because you do, you can talk about that, but you've learned a side of the business that you didn't necessarily have a huge interest in originally.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. It's definitely rounded out my knowledge of racing working at the TDN, because I would liken it more to the Wall Street Journal than the New York Times, you know. And it really teaches you the kind of soup to nuts process that gets the horse to the racetrack in the end. There's just so much that goes into it, you know, from the foaling to the yearling sales, to the two-year-old sales, to layups, and it gives you everything you need to know about how hard it is just to get the horse to the racetrack in the end. And that really has made me appreciate kind of all the smaller behind-the-scenes players in racing that you don't really learn that much about or hear that much about. Like, we went down to the OBS April sale to do a live version of our podcast, which is called The Writer's Room, if you want to check it out. I had to pop that plug in. I got to meet all sorts of, it was kind of like a whole new world, like all the consigners and all the people that work at sales, and it really opened my eyes for sure.
Does it help the handicapping?
A little bit, yeah. I think I've learned how to watch breezes better and look for certain things physically, but yeah, I think it has helped a little bit. At least I hope to think so.
Well, and it's one of the things, and you can speak to this, Joe, and I know, you know, with the show, with the Writer's Room show that you guys do with Bill Finley and also, of course, with John Green. The stories that get told most often, it starts with the horse and the horsemen and the owners, the riders, and the races. It's the tip of the iceberg, mm-hmm. because the developers of talent, and it's always one of the most fun conversations for me when we have on the radio, when we've got, you know, anybody that is developing horses. Lee talked about Pat Hoppel. And, you know, if you think that trainers are taciturn and you know, kind of shut mouth and a little shy, not all of them, but some of them, most of them, you should try talking to guys that are pinhooking and, you know, the majority of them, as we've said forever, anybody that's doing this as a livelihood is already a slightly unusual person.
Yep.
It's a whole different kind of a mindset.
Yeah.
So they're not necessarily comfortable and outgoing with media or even merchandising themselves, you know, to new prospective owners.
Yep.
And so those stories, and you mentioned things like foaling. I mean, one of the best parts of Twitter is when a horse wins and you see any number of staffers that literally pulled the mm-hmm. foal out, you know, the evening of their birth. It's amazing. And we're telling literally a story. It's the proverbial iceberg. They're showing 10% of the, and there's 90% underneath.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Kentucky Derby does that Tales from the Crib thing.
Yeah,
when they,
yeah, yeah.
I think that's very good to give you that background and the, you know, to learn to know the horses from the jump. And that's true. I mean, these people don't really get the kind of publicity that the trainers and the owners and a Steve Bick and a Seth Merrill get, but it's just as important to get the horse to the races.
Absolutely.
And it's the consigners especially are pretty interesting, because it's basically 6 months. 6 months is like their entire job, their entire livelihood, and then they just got to do it all over again, and they never have that real connection to the horses on the racetrack. So you really have to have this single-minded focus, and it's fascinating to me how many different jobs there are in this industry, but how many are crucial that you don't necessarily hear about.
No, it's exactly
right. Pinhooking, I think, is a great area of the industry that doesn't get covered enough.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a gamble, but the mindset that folks have to jump in, gives them a look at the breeding side of the game that other folks don't have. And as they say, it's a side of the game that I don't think it's covered enough or at all, really.
Yeah, no, I mean, we do this thing. We run this little box in the TDN at every sale called Nothing But Net. And that's basically guys who had...
Muirfield Insurance.
Yeah, yeah. Wow, he knows the sponsorship. My God. But no, it's guys or gals who had successes pinhooking. And it's really popular. People like to see their names in that feature. And yeah, that's one of the things that I've gotten more interested in. And you asked if, you know, I've learned more about the business from following the sales more. Pinhooking is something that I'm definitely interested in, you know, in terms of the future, because I think, you know, in a game where it's very, very hard to make money, I think that that's one of the ways that, you know, it's a quick return on investment. You don't always hit, but that's something I'm very interested in.
Well, and it's a daring proposition. And in terms of picking out yearlings, in some cases weanlings, that you're then speculating how quickly they're going to grow.
We should maybe explain what pinhooking is for folks who may not be familiar. These folks will go into a sale and buy a horse with no intention of running a horse. They're just looking to turn the horse around at a later auction.
Like, well, flipping horses.
Yeah. Exactly. And you know, there's several degrees of this, and there's even a subset that, again, is not as widely discussed as it could be, and that's the John Hancocks of the world, and some of these guys the Irish kid that had the great Keeneland this spring.
I
had
John him on. Ennis?
Yes,
yeah.
John Ennis. There's also this whole market where the horse might not be ready to sell even as late as June, and so the pinhooker goes ahead and starts a few times, and then, you know, looking to hit early. If they do, they then start fielding offers and they sell them, and this is their career. They don't go beyond, you know, with a 3-year-old. I mean, once in a while maybe, but typically they're going to get a start or two. They're going to catch the eye. They're going to be a flashy performer, and somebody's going to come along and sell.
Well, you know, the increasing advent of digital sales, I think, is also making that more possible
too. At any time, it could happen at any time.
So you don't have to have an auction house and send them through the ring. You can just pop them up online off a start or two. Like, I remember, unfortunately, he was euthanized recently, but Faya was that kind of horse that sold, had a really impressive debut, wasn't ready for the 2-year-old sales or whatever, and then sold, I think it was at the Wanamaker sale, for like $450,000. So it's even easier now that you don't necessarily have to go through a physical auction ring.
Well, and Keeneland is doing it, and you mentioned Wanamakers, which is new, and there's somebody else. There's another one that sort of has cropped up. You see them advertised, and I don't want to say there's one every month, but it feels like every 6 weeks or so, there's a hat full of, you know, 7 to 12 to 15 horses that are being sold, and it's essentially a digital horses of racing age sale every so often. And, you know, for some outfits that are liquidating and aren't going to wait, you know, that we got this, unfortunately, we got this Pinoak dispersal that's going to be tough. And Samsung, you know, Samsung had the dispersal. There's people that are dispersing without waiting for a formal sale at these. And essentially, you got to be on your toes because, as they say, a good horse can come from anywhere.
Of course, yeah. And it's like I said, it makes it easier to sell at any time of the year. And I think the digital sales... you don't get too many horses right now. You maybe get a few dozen, but I think that's going to pick up over time when more people become aware of that market.
In addition, Joe, to the bloodstock trade, one of the things that the show and I suppose, you know, you and Bill Finley probably, you know, drive this the most. The issues of the day in the industry. And, of course, this was another shoe-dropping week with the Georgia Navarro guilty plea. And there's no way to know as of now if there's more going on behind the scenes with him. You know, but there has been some outspoken response from horsemen.
Mm-hmm.
And that's somewhat... new. We haven't had a lot of that. Some thoughts about handling these kinds of issues and these topics, and what the horse playing community, the fan base, the stakeholder community, you know, what we should all be doing that can help us collectively, because this is a topic that has been really difficult to deal with, mm-hmm. because innuendo online and stuff being spewed anonymously does nobody any good.
There would be no Twitter if that.
That might be better for everyone. The proverbial move up performances mm-hmm. that can't necessarily be attributed, you know, without delving into each individual right. case. You know, people are saying, well, why doesn't anybody call them out? Call them out how exactly? Until you've got evidence, and in this case, we had the interceding of the federal government yeah. that made it possible. How do we judge this topic, and how for the greater good do you think we go forward?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. You know, we worry a lot on our show about not getting sued. You know, there are so many people that we have suspicions about, but you can't just come out and say this guy's a cheater, that guy's a cheater, because you'll get sued. So that's why it was so cathartic when these FBI indictments came down, that you could finally say, you know, these were guys that, if you were paying attention to racing, you knew were taking an edge. And I think that's where some of the frustration comes from the racing Twitter people, is that, you know, they could see it, the horse players could see it, yet nobody in the industry seemed to publicly acknowledge it. And part of that reason is because you don't want to get sued. But it was extremely cathartic when those indictments came out, that you could finally call a spade and say, this guy is cheating. First of all, you had to say allegedly, but now that Navarro pled guilty, this guy's cheating, you know, this guy's doing the wrong thing. And I honestly will be disappointed if it's only those two guys in the long run, if only those two guys get busted. And I think that it did not reflect well on our industry that the FBI had to come in and do our dirty work for us. Like, that to me was a major problem. And I don't, you know, I'm hoping that when HISA comes in, that'll be, you know, you'll at least have uniform drug enforcement, which I think is a big deal. Whether or not it's going to be the right program right away, it'll probably need tweaks. But just so that you don't have 33 different jurisdictions with guys get popped in one jurisdiction and then they jump over to another place. Like, the fact that Marcus Vitale was able to come back and run a horse at Saratoga, I thought was a pretty public embarrassment for the sport. But it wasn't because Naira or Saratoga necessarily did something wrong. It was just that we have this kind of toothless enforcement mechanism in this country where you can just shop around. Eventually, everybody gets a 10th, 12th, 15th chance. And I think that's a big problem. But as far as how we address it, you know, I think at least there has been public acknowledgement in the last year or so from decision makers and from people with high profile in the sport that we need to get better on the drug enforcement issue. And it's going to take a long time. It's going to take a long time to get it right. But I think at least there's movement in that direction. Even if you want to just go down to, you know, banning clenbuterol, like Mark Cassidy was a big proponent of that. Mm-hmm. I think got the ball moving on that. Just to at least acknowledge the problem and be like, we have to all be pushing in the same direction to try to fix it. I think that that's a huge deal. And of course, the unifying drug enforcement, I think, is going to be a big deal too.
Well, and you know, there's so many different moving parts to this, which also includes due process mm-hmm. and just the mechanics, you know, the slow grinding gears of legality. I think there's probably more hope than there's been in a while. Mm-hmm. I think to some degree you've had a resignation. One of the issues that we've got, though, is an inability, it seems, for the public to discern, and I don't mean the mainstream public that isn't interested in the game.
Right.
I mean, we already know that they're not capable of discerning. But the ongoing issue that we've had between medication overages mm-hmm. versus overt attempts to cheat and utilize difficult to test product, this is an issue that I don't think is going away anytime soon. And that issue, of course, is not every called positive it is an attempt to cheat.
Yeah.
There's medication overages, and we are going to continue to utilize therapeutic meds because these are athletes that need things like anti-inflammatories. If you want to spread out the withdrawal times, that's fine. But this notion that portions of the industry created that, oh, the rest of the world operates drug-free, that's a lie. That's a bold-faced lie that is 100% not true. The rest of the world doesn't test like we do, number one. They don't test nearly as many winners. They don't test horses randomly. They don't test horses that finish second and third. They don't test for the screenings that we do. So this notion that the rest of the world is operating so pristinely is just a farce. And trying to be dragged to this illusory nirvana that the rest of the world engages in is just laughable.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think there's ever going to be a nirvana, and I agree with what you're saying, that I think that those comparisons are a little fraught. Like, I don't think that this necessarily apples to apples. But I think you would agree that the patchwork system of regulation enforcement
is difficult.
Not good. Yeah. And that's one thing that, you know, the British Horse Racing Authority, whether or not they're doing the same testing, at least there's a unified body that can make rulings, and then there's so much less ambiguity. Like, to me, the problem is, you know, there's ambiguity and there's so much suspicion. You know, I call it the era of suspicion. Like, I remember a couple weeks ago when Orlando Noda had that horse, You're to Blame, who won off by 10 lengths or so. And the horse figured on paper. It wasn't like, you know, he ran this race that he had never run before. He hadn't run it in a while. I don't know whether Orlando Noda's cheating or not. I don't know whether this move up or that move up is a result of cheating, but the industry has been so asleep at the switch in terms of busting actual drug cheats that I think it leaves everybody, you know, prone to this kind of suspicion. And it's unfortunate because I think, you know, there are really good training jobs where a guy can find, you know, something that was bothering a horse and then, you know, can make them find their top form again. And I don't think that every move up is a juice job, but, you know, when you let the obvious, at least to me, juicers go on for so long, claiming horses moving up 30 points, that leads to this era of suspicion where I think everybody is guilty until proven innocent to a lot of people in racing, and I think that's unfortunate.
Yeah. Won't argue.
Are we going to actually talk about races? We have to go to break.
No, we're good.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah.
Before we do that, though, because you mentioned already a couple times the writer's room, when you sat down, I said I listen to it all the time, have been kind of regularly for the past 6 months or so, and so I'll let you tout it a little bit. How often does it come out, and where can people find it?
So we record usually every Wednesday morning, and we had been doing it on Zoom for the past 16 months or so, and then thankfully we were able to get back in the studio last month, so it's nice. We have a shout-out to our publisher, Sue Finley, and our producer, Patty Wolf, who's coming up to help us do the show in a couple of days. Great, great production value. She has a great team of editors, so it looks much better now than it did on Zoom. You know, even on Zoom, they did what they could, but now it looks really good. And so we record every Wednesday morning. The podcast usually comes out Wednesday night. There's an audio version, there's a video version, and so we're going to be here on Tuesday, actually by the paddock at the TV setup, recording. It's actually our 100th show. So if you're around, I know it's a dark day, but come on by and say hello. But yeah, I mean, it's been great. We've gotten a lot of great support from the industry. We've gotten, you know, I think 7 or 8 sponsors by now. And, you know, it's something that grew from like 50 listeners to 1,000. So we're really excited about it. And I think, you know, similar to what you do, I think that we are able in our small way to move the needle on these broad scope industry issues, at least with the people who are watching and listening.
No, fun to listen to TDN Thoroughbred Daily News, so I wanted to make sure people knew where to find it.
Appreciate it.
Worth a listen.
Yeah, thank you.
TheTDN.com when you go to look for it. Racing news, racing thoughts, where to start.
I'll get a thought from last week. Knicks go. What did you think of the Whitney performance? Because short field, it looked like he had the pace advantage, yeah, and it played out that way. But regardless, he looked great, I thought.
He sure did, and he finished up great. You know, I think he's one of those horses that it almost, if he's able to clear, it almost doesn't even matter what the fractions are. You know, you can kind of just throw out the fractions. He went 23 and 46. As long as he's able to clear, he's just very tough to beat at 9 furlongs and down at least. And it looked like Swiss Skydiver was going to give him a little bit of a run there. And I thought, you know, he's just one of those horses. You can't let him get eyeballed. And I thought Joel Rosario did a great job on the far turn. Here he is more clearing than, from
a couple different times he gave, yeah, him breathers. Couple,
yeah,
different,
well,
times.
And then when she came to him, this is on the first turn, I thought she would give him a little bit more of a tussle for the lead, but I think smartly kind of backed out of there and tried to come after him on a far turn. And then on the far turn, when she came after him, I thought Rosario did a good job not letting him get eyeballed and then kind of took Swiss Skydiver wide off of the far turn. And I think that's important for a horse like him who's just a need-the-lead type. He reminds me a little bit of Commentator back in the day. A commentator could just go out and blaze these fast fractions and, you know, keep going. But if he got eyeballed like he did in that Woodward, I don't know if you guys remember when Jetro ran like 3 rabbits in a 5-horse race to fry Commentator, then he's, you know, he's obviously a different horse. So the Knicks go is like that. And I wonder what's going to happen the rest of the year with the handicap division. Obviously Mystic Guide is on the sideline now, unfortunately. I'm still going to be against him in the Classic, I think, especially if there's other speed signed on, because I just, you know, especially if he has another blowout win like this, I think he's going to be too short. I think he's going to be 3-5, 4-5, going 1.25. I don't want him at that price, but this was obviously very impressive.
Yeah, and after the race, Brad said 1.25, no problem.
But I mean, that's what he said. So what's he going to say? You know?
I'm also a little bit, but he looked great the other day. Yeah. Coming out of that race at Prairie Meadows, you know, going to Prairie Meadows, I said, I was on TV that afternoon. I said, hey, I think they're going over for a little confidence builder. And, yeah, mission accomplished in that Prairie Meadows race, yeah, and benefited him coming into this one.
This is the second time that Rosario essentially lets the field catch him and then lets it out a notch. And nothing will rip the heart out of a horse and a rider like that. I mean, that just, forget it.
Yeah.
Saez does this great, too.
Yep. Yeah, and I honestly thought that Maxfield ran pretty well considering the pace. You know, I thought, you know, it was a short field, but I you know, two of the three or four best handicap horses in the country, like I said, especially now with Mystic Guy being on the sideline. I thought there was no disgrace in losing in that race for Maxfield. It's just Knicks go had everything his own way.
Thoughts on yesterday? Because, again, we had Lee Einsiedler. I thought High Oak looked really good. I like Gunite, and I said earlier I thought Gunite ran well. Mm-hmm. But High Oak was very impressive and got Stormy bounced out there. A lot of people are like, yeah, maybe she's lost this. Yeah. She just loves it up there.
I was one of those people, unfortunately. Like, that really, not really killed everything for me when she won that race. But, yeah, I mean, she just, I feel like Mark Askew should just run her in this race every year. Just once a year, take her off the farm, run her in the four-star Dave. Yeah, she was impressive, got a good trip, got a good ride, I thought. And the two-year-old, it was. I think that there has, I don't know if you guys agree, but I feel like there hasn't been those blowout two-year-old performances, really, other than yesterday and Wit. Like, that was it. Usually you get these two-year-old colts that are just lighting up the Saratoga meet, but
Andy Serling, every week, he and I are kind of going over the two-year-old performances, and if you go through the winner's book of the meet, and I do have a little other stat to bring up, mm-hmm, but the two-year-old turf performances are where all the standouts have been,
mm-hmm,
both short and long. You had that Lady Dene the other day, yeah, 85 buyer. It's very notable. And I've said for ages, going back to the Breeders' Cup, starting the juvenile turf division, that when they did that, they changed the dynamics, essentially, of two-year-old approach. And instead of taking turf two-year-olds and let's run him on the dirt until he proves he's not a dirt horse.
Yeah.
They're taking their turf horses because there's some place to run them and there's goals for you, right, to run them. And as a result, you're getting horses that, frankly, one of the reasons you may not be seeing these spreads in the two-year-old dirt races is because horses that shouldn't have been running on the dirt to begin with are no longer starting their careers in those races,
yeah,
and finishing up the track.
Yep.
Instead, they've got their own row to hoe.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that's really interesting. And I think Chad Brown, the kind of trying to catch and be Chad Brown, has kind of, I think, made people think that way, that they want to try to win these two-year-old turf races because there are goals. Ed Chad has kind of dominated that division for a long time, but I think other trainers are starting to catch up a little bit. Dripping Gold was another one.
Yep.
West Point was one of our early sponsors on the writers' room, so we're always happy to see them. I thought that was an interesting horse because he was a $300,000 Lemon Drop kid at OBS March. Like, how many Lemon Drop kids do you see go and breeze 10 flat at the two-year-old sales out of a Danzig mare? You don't see Danzig mares producing that much anymore.
Look at you. Look at the big pedigree brain on Brett.
But yeah, no, I mean, I told you, all encompassing. I got the whole package now, baby. Sales, breeding, what you want. But yeah, no, I agree with you. I hadn't really thought of that, but I agree that there have been a lot more impressive turf performances by two-year-olds than I've seen in years past.
And speaking of horses that flash their chops, and Lee mentioned it just from a sort of a afternoon angle. Speaker's Corner yesterday, a 101 buyer, and this was a horse that last year, in fact, that whole field, not the whole field, but a good portion of that field, were flashy two-year-olds that had different hiccups along the way. 10 for 10 for Shug. Unfortunately, Ducale threw an absolute fit in the paddock. Second of that, there were two of those yesterday. Mm-hmm. One, and they both ended up scratching, actually, now that I think about it. But we, you know, the one thing about that Speaker's Corner race yesterday, Ducale might have made that makeup, you know, the race's makeup would have been a little different, but still, Speaker's Corner absolutely blitzed that group, a 101 buyer, and suddenly, I mean, Travers is Travers, and it's going to be what, you know, what we're all looking forward to. Pennsylvania Derby is going to be the coda on the three-year-old season.
Yeah.
And Speaker's Corner is going to make a, you know, kind of jump in at the quarter pole and be involved in that Pennsylvania Derby. Hot Rod Charlie bypassing the Pacific Classic for the Pennsylvania Derby. Weyburn is heading there. Mm-hmm. And I think Travers and Pennsylvania Derby are going to set things up for a really important and great classic.
Yeah, well, and I think that, you know, obviously Essential Quality is the kingpin right now. The Mandaloon injury was unfortunate that he's probably going to miss the rest of the year. But overall, I feel like it's a pretty deep class of three-year-olds with different, you know, seven furlong horses, mile and eighth horses. I think the Travers is going to be a pretty big field. And like you said, the Pennsylvania Derby and the Jerkins with Life is Good coming back. I think that's going to be...
yesterday, 113.
Yep. And Speaker's Corner was super impressive yesterday. He was one of those horses that kind of finally lived up to the hype. I know he's only started three times, but his first two races I thought were okay. You know, I didn't think they were great enough that his reputation preceded him. Yesterday was extremely impressive. Like you said, Ducale scratching was huge, although with how Asking for a Baskin stunk it up yesterday, I don't know. I'm questioning that figure a little bit. I remember it was a 103, taken down to a 97. But yeah, Speaker's Corner was very, very impressive. It'll be interesting to see how far he wants to go.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Arlington, did you guys make any money there? It's very hard.
Well, and the funny thing, it's funny, speaking of Arlington and the sad, I mean, just, terrible. it was really tough to, it's still tough to accept, frankly.
Yeah.
But the best part of two Emmys winning that race, James Graham, winning a $600,000 race, and a guy that, you know, had ridden in Chicago and had a riding title at Arlington. But you, Robertson, we were celebrating Lee buying the Gormley for $70,000. That was a $4,500 purchase.
Wow.
$4,500. And you, Robertson, and his son, Mac, they've been doing that for years and years. And so for a real classic mid-American horseman to win the last Arlington Million, what we think is the last Arlington Million, it was really kind of cool, and I understand everybody that gets frustrated with the snatch and grab, and why they let him go, 49 and 113 or whatever it was, but I was very. I was very pleased.
It was much slower than that. 26:52 and 160.
There you go. All right. Yeah. I'll tell you, the guy that
sundial timing.
I would have liked to have seen win yesterday, which was too bad. Was in the Secretariat in the Bruce D.
Mm-hmm.
E.T. Baird, that may be his last chance at a grade one.
Yeah.
He's 54 years old, I think. He's had a tremendous career, and he's winning, you know, he's winning plenty. He missed, I think, almost a year and a half or so in the last couple of years, and I kind of wanted to see that that Ravelli on the outside. I'm going to forget the horse's name now.
Like a salt shaker?
Yes, like a salt shaker. He was out there on the lead for a while. Ended up fifth, I think. But
and a guy who's always aggressive, like you know, that's the thing. And I, you know, I was obviously could not have had that horse that won the million, but I do like seeing aggressive riding pay off. You know, if you have if you have a long shot with any kind of speed in a big race, just send. You know, I see too much grabbing. Like yesterday, I remember it was the sixth or seventh race here at Saratoga, and it was the race that Irad won on Restored Order. And he had just in time for Wine in the race, who has never done anything but run off. And that was the day they decided to stomp on the brakes and pull him back. And then Restored Order goes all the way at 5-2. That's the kind of thing that leaves a negative, you know, a bad taste in your mouth. And I think there's too much of that. So even though I couldn't have that winner in the Arlington Million, I was glad to see aggressive riding pay off. And also, Mean Mary got beat because someone actually put some pressure on her. You know,
it's true. Although she ran very well,
she did, especially after breaking through the gate.
That Santa Barbara, I mean,
she's big time.
This is a serious filly.
Yeah.
And there she is in the dark blue Kubor colors.
She was loaded on that far turn. Yeah.
This is a scary talent.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I actually had forgotten that she was a three-year-old because she won the Belmont Oaks. I forgot that she was going against older horses here, but yeah, she is super, super impressive. And you know, John told me this on the show the other day that Aiden O'Brien and Joseph O'Brien might keep some horses in America to run at Kentucky Downs.
How about that?
Yeah, that makes sense. You know, they're not stallion making races because they're not grade ones, but it's a lot of money and it's a European style turf course. So it'll be interesting to see what she does the rest of the year.
Well, and you talk about the Kentucky Downs meet. They run for more money in 6 days than the entire Euro flat season.
Yeah.
I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's you know, no disrespect to Mike Maker, who I think does a good job. He doesn't have the stock that the O'Briens have. Oh, sure. And that even Chad Brown has just started running there in the last year or two. You know, it's been Mike Maker's playground for so long that it's refreshing to see some other trainers get involved, even if they're big trainers like Chad Brown. And that's like, I'm just going back to that. It'll be very interesting if the O'Briens show up at Kentucky Downs, because there's a lot of money for the taking.
Yeah, fun meet because of that money. Get nice full fields.
Yeah, it's a great betting product too. Love it. Yep.
All right. We should probably wrap, right?
We'll
come back for one more segment.
Whatever you want to do.
Well, anyway, we'll go to a break. We'll come back and say goodbye because you won't be here the next couple of weeks. So
that's true.
I'll come back and say goodbye.
Where are you going?
Del Mar
and
the NHC.
Nice. All right.
Busy guy. Yeah. But, Joe, we appreciate the visit.
Well, thanks so much
Once again, check out the TDN Writers Room. Very good content weekly, so folks can look for it on Wednesdays.
Wednesday night. This week we're going to record a day early. We're recording Tuesday, but generally, Wednesday night is when it comes out.
Very good.
Straight out of Carolina Barbecue, the OEY.
Had to bring that up.
Oh, I wasn't going to miss a chance. Oh, in fact, I should put up a picture. Seth and I are doing. Seth's doing a This Is Your Life, actually.
Right. I'm Ralph Edwards a little bit later.
He's going to bring out my second grade teacher, Mrs. Sadlon. By the way, speaking of which, Manchester, Connecticut, Little League World Series, first time ever.
Oh.
I'm a graduate of the Manchester Little League program.
Were you a designated hitter?
No, they didn't have that when I was a kid. This was the 60s. And no, they put me behind the plate. Believe it or not, I was a catcher because I've been this size since I was like 8. And then everybody went past me. But then as we got older, they put me on second base, which is where I pretty much plied the trade.
Gotcha.
Flashing the leather. And, you know, boom.
A couple of bunts. Oh, yeah. That's like somehow fits his personality, the sacrifice.
Exactly.
Steve is a sacrificer.
You know, it's the thinking man's sport.
True.
You don't have to be a great athlete, which I never was.
True.
But baseball, you can stand out without... You know.
Little did we know. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back and wrap up this Sunday edition of Loose on the Lead. Stay tuned.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you, where's the best sports bar in the Capital Region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
The Capital Region has some of the most sophisticated horse racing fans in the country. That's why Capital OTB built the Clubhouse Racebook. Here you can wager year-round on the best horse racing from around the world. The Clubhouse also has monthly promotions including live bankrolls, handicapping contests, and so much more. Like sports? Watch your favorite teams on more than 30 screens in Legends Field Sports Grill. Food, sports, and the excitement of championship horse racing only at the Clubhouse Racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
I'm Seth Merrill, and as Serious Horse Players, we know that information is critical when placing a bet. With live streaming of more than 30 tracks, race replays, free past performances, and daily picks from professional handicappers, no one gives you more up-to-the-minute information than Capital OTB. Combine that with the best player awards in New York State, and you have everything a Serious Horse Player needs to be successful.
Win more with Capital OTB.
Winning starts here.
Yeah, I saw that you guys sort of had gone away.
Oh, here we are. We're back. That was quick.
We're back
there was,
now?
There was no countdown.
Well,
there
come
was,
on.
There was. I will give him a pass. He was out here readjusting the camera. So, always appreciate the control room staff there. But got to wrap it up. But we did want to come back because you had a stat you wanted to hit on too.
Well, I wanted to give everybody an update. On the New York Breds launch
on your,
the turf.
Your angle.
It's the Bic angle. We should come up with a better moniker.
We will. We will. Come up
the
with
Bic theorem?
That is better.
The Bic corollary. But what's it a corollary to?
Well,
the Bic tangent?
We'll come up with
I am. I've been known to. I do go on tangents. The Bic tangent.
All right.
That's not bad.
No, yeah.
That's not bad. That'd be a good name for a horse. The Tangent. We don't do that as much anymore. You know, years ago, there were so many great horses that were the something, right?
Oh, there was the vid.
There was the vid.
There was a good
was there
one.
The?
There was a good one today, the sixth race. I talked about it on the handicappers report. I will mention it again for anybody who didn't catch it. There's a horse called Candy Monet in the...
Candy Monet.
Sixth race today by Painter out of Judy's Fudge.
Well, what about Black Licorice? You missed Black Licorice.
I did miss Black Licorice.
That's the exacta, probably. Black Licorice and Candy Monet.
Okay, all right.
I picked Candy Monet, who's 4-1. I tell you, I want to use that Eddie Barker Roxen, the 10 in there, 12-1, and first Lasix. That's a very interesting maiden 40. And I'll be interested to see who gets taken out of that race.
Yeah.
There's some interesting, very curious. It's a good race. Starts the pick five. And actually a very nice sequence today. Anyway, back to the New York Breds long on the turf, which we've been singing the praises of for several years. Here's the update. We now have had 15 races set. Only two favorites. Out of the 15, and recent winners, 7-40-1, 9-1, 11-1, 3-1, 7-2, 2-1, 780-1, 2370-1. So the point is, this average continues to be in the 7-1 range. 685, now over here. 685, this is not my strong suit. I'm a radio guy. The 685, although I look good.
You do look good. I will admit that. I like your jacket.
685 to 1 is your, so 1570 is the average.
You know what, though? I will say.
Yes.
I'm a little upset that technically we were not on the air last week, because if there was ever summer casual, and you made fun of me without the tie, you were completely summer casual last week.
What was I prepared for?
Yeah, you just
for?
Had a short sleeve shirt and some shorts on. You didn't even have the tie. You didn't have the jacket.
Oh no, it was all.
Oh, you were ready to go. Oh, okay.
I came that way because I was over on the Oklahoma watching the horse work, and no.
I should have known.
So anyway, keep your eye out. We haven't had one for a couple of days, but long on the turf, New York breads, maiden claimers, maiden special, allowance, steak. It doesn't matter. It's the best betting opportunity on a regular basis. Back to the sale for a minute. We were going to have Larray Visaggi from Rock Ridge. We've got our two mares down there, and also the Motown Baby that is by Volterine's side, and Carlisle Bell, who's in foal to Leah Frick, standing. And there's only one Rock Ridge in the sale, but I'll have Larray on the radio this week. Does a fabulous job, and we're thrilled. The baby down there and needed a little attention the first week or 10 days, and we've lost foals. So the way in which the staff at Rock Ridge, Larray and his team, couldn't be happier, and you'll see him out at the sale tomorrow and Tuesday. Best of luck to all the breeders, consigners, buyers the New York Bred sale.
And earlier on the handicappers report, I said if you didn't make it to the other sale, go to the New York Bred sale. And I think I said tonight, tomorrow. It's tomorrow and Tuesday.
Yes.
Go over right down the street, three blocks down. If you haven't been to the sales, New York Bred sale, a little smaller of a crowd, but really over the past few years, well, not last year, obviously, but the past few years, still getting pretty good crowds for the New York Bred sale, and it's fun. Go over, and I think you'll enjoy it Monday and Tuesday night.
Very nice catalog, really nice catalog.
All right, we should wrap it up because we are late, but I did want to have the closing segment here just to say, wish you fun and safe travels, because next weekend you will be out at Del Mar, the following weekend NHC, which unfortunately, you know, we have gone to in previous years and covered here, but it's Traverse weekend. But then you'll be back in 3 weeks, right?
We'll be back in 3 weeks for the Labor Day weekend show. But we'll talk to you. You're going to reach out. We'll talk to you from Del Mar on Sunday. And then the following week after Traverse from Vegas, where we will... Will we have a winner? No, we won't have a winner. It'll be...
But it'll be whittled down
yes,
by that point.
We'll have the top... at that point, we'll have the top... What is it? 150? 100. And then we cut it down to 30. I'm going to forget. I got to refresh. But anyway.
Middle of the day. Yeah. Things. And I continue to say, and I've said it to you a million times before, who would think radio in a handicapping contest? But it is incredibly fun. If you want to check it out, when Steve's down a couple weeks down in Vegas, as I say, you will enjoy it, certainly, and we'll check in with you, as I say, that Sunday morning as well. So we'll wrap things up for this Sunday morning. Good luck this afternoon. Good luck to all of you this afternoon. Loose on the Lead in the books for Sunday, August 15th. Stay tuned. Great racing later on this afternoon.
Giveaway.
And we, oh, it is, yeah, cooler bag. I'm glad you mentioned that. Cooler bag. Also, low rollers over there, so keep that in mind. Over in the four-star Dave area, but you're right. I'm glad you mentioned that. It's cooler bag giveaway day today here at the racetrack as well. All right. Thanks for tuning in. We will see you next time.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.